The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're tackling a book that's become, well, kind of a classic in communication. Crucial Conversations, Tools for Talking When Stakes Are High. And these crucial conversations, they're everywhere, aren't they? Maybe it's talking to a colleague who keeps missing deadlines, or that tricky chat about finances with your partner.
Exactly. The book defines them as any discussion where, you know, the stakes feel high, opinions clash, and importantly, emotions are running strong.
Which sounds like a lot of important conversations.
It is, and that's why the book matters so much. The authors basically argue that getting good at these specific conversations is maybe the single biggest lever you have for improving, well, pretty much everything. Your career, relationships, even your health.
So it's like a shortcut. Handle these few key moments well, and a lot of chronic problems start to resolve themselves.
That's the core idea, yeah. It's about fixing things at the root rather than just dealing with symptoms all the time. Now, the people who figure this out, the authors, there are four of them. Carrie Tatterson, Joseph Grenny, Ron McMillan, and Al Switzler. They were co-founders of Vital Smarts, which is now called Crucial Learning.
Okay, and what makes their approach special? It's not just theory, right?
Not at all.
Right.
That's the key thing. Their work comes from decades of really intensive empirical research. They studied thousands of people in organizations.
People they called positive deviants. I like that term.
Me too. It means people who consistently got great results and kept strong relationships, even when things got tense. High performers who just navigated these situations differently.
So they watched what these successful people actually did.
Exactly. They reverse engineered it. They looked at the specific behaviors, the actual words, the timing, and they broke it down. They basically turned what looked like some kind of innate talent into a set of skills.
Skills anyone can learn, presumably.
That's the promise. They codified it into a system.
Okay, so let's get into the system. What's the main problem these skills are designed to solve? Well, the book says that when we hit one of these crucial conversations, our natural instincts, driven by fear and adrenaline, usually push us into one of two really unhelpful directions.
Right. Bad defaults, basically.
The first one is silence. You know, just avoiding the topic altogether, or maybe masking your real feelings, sugarcoating or just withdrawing, clamming up.
Yeah, hoping it goes away.
Yeah.
Which it usually doesn't.
And the other extreme is violence.
Yeah.
And they don't just mean physical violence, obviously. It's verbal stuff, like trying to control the conversation, maybe attacking the other person's character, labeling them.
Or just trying to force your opinion through.
Steamrolling them.
Exactly. And the authors are really clear. Both silence and violence are destructive.
Yeah.
They kill good decision making and they seriously damage relationships.
And this leads to what they call the fool's choice, this idea that you're stuck. You feel like you have to choose between telling the truth or keeping the relationship. Like, I can be honest and potentially blow things up, or I can bite my tongue and keep the peace, but nothing gets solved.
Precisely. And the whole point of the book, the core goal, is to show you that this is a false dilemma. You don't have to make that choice.
So the real aim isn't about winning the argument or even compromising necessarily. It's about something else.
It is. It's about creating and maintaining what they call the shared pool of meaning.
Okay, unpack that a bit. Shared pool of meaning.
Think of it like a collective understanding. It's the space in the conversation where everyone feels safe enough to put all their relevant information, their perspectives, their ideas, their feelings, openly on the table.
So getting everything out there, honestly.
Yes, but crucially, safely. The bigger that shared pool, the more information and perspectives everyone contributes. The smarter the final decision will be, and the stronger the relationship, because you've actually understood each other.
So dialogue, in their view, is just making sure that meaning flows freely into that pool.
That's it. Every tool, every technique in the book is designed to help you get information into that pool or keep it flowing safely, even when things get tough.
Right. And a big part of that, maybe the starting point, is internal. They really emphasize this idea of work on me first.
Absolutely. You can't control the other person, but you can manage yourself.
And the first step they suggest is start with heart. This means before you even open your mouth, you pause and ask yourself some focusing questions.
Like, what do I really want here?
Yeah. What do I really want for myself? What do I want for the other person? And what do I really want for the relationship? Getting clear on your true motives.
Because if your hidden motive is actually just to win or punish them,
right,
or look good, you're probably going to slip into violence, aren't you?
Exactly. But if you can genuinely align yourself with a positive, shared outcome, you're starting from a much healthier place.
That internal check is vital. But maybe the most mind-bending internal tool they offer is Master My Stories.
Ah, this one's fascinating. The idea that our emotions don't come directly from what happens.
Right. We think, my boss criticized my report. Action, so I feel angry. Emotion. But they argue there's a crucial step in between.
The story we tell ourselves about the action.
Precisely. They call it the path to action.
Yeah.
You see here something, you tell yourself a story about it. That story creates an emotion, and the emotion drives how you act.
It sounds almost too simple, but when you think about it, like road rage, someone cuts you off, that's the action.
In fact, car moved aggressively.
My instant story might be, that absolute idiot, they're so selfish, that's a villain story, one of their clever stories.
And that story makes you furious. So you honk or tailgate or yell. That's the act.
But if I could pause and challenge that story, ask, why might a reasonable person do that? Maybe the story becomes, maybe they're rushing to the hospital or having some kind of emergency.
And suddenly the emotion isn't rage anymore. Maybe it's concern or just neutrality. And your action changes completely. You just let it go.
That's the power, isn't it? Realizing we create our own emotional weather through the stories we tell.
It's huge. And mastering those stories, particularly avoiding the victim story, it's not my fault, the villain story, it's all your fault, and the helpless story, there's nothing I can do, that's key to staying in dialogue.
Okay, so you've worked on yourself, got your heart right, checked your story. What next?
Then you need to pay attention to the conversation itself. That's learn to look. It's about developing situational awareness.
You're watching two things simultaneously.
Yeah. You're tracking the content, what you're actually talking about. But just as importantly, you're tracking the condition. How safe does it feel? Are people starting to tense up? Is their voice changing? Are they moving towards silence or violence?
Spotting those early warning signs?
Exactly. Because if you spot them early, you could do something about it.
And this feels like the absolute linchpin of the whole book. When you see those signs, when safety starts to drop, you have to stop talking about the issue.
Yes. Step out of the content immediately and make it safe. This is non-negotiable. If people don't feel psychologically safe, nothing else you say matters. Your brilliant logic, your compelling facts, they won't land.
So how do you make it safe? What does safety look like?
They break it down into two critical components: mutual purpose and mutual respect.
Mutual purpose meaning we both believe we're working towards a common goal, that you care about my interests too.
Exactly. And mutual respect meaning even if we disagree strongly, I still believe you value me as a person and vice versa. You don't think I'm incompetent or bad just because I see things differently.
Okay, so let's say respect breaks down. Someone feels insulted or dismissed. What's the go-to tool?
The most practical, immediate tool is contrasting. It's brilliant for fixing misunderstandings about your intent.
How does it work?
It's a simple don't do statement. You address the negative assumption first, then state your positive intent.
Give me an example.
Okay, say you're giving feedback and the person gets defensive. You could say, look, I don't want to imply you aren't working hard the don't part, addressing their fear. I do want to talk about how to make sure this project meets the deadline, because I know we both want it to succeed the do part, stating your positive intent and hinting at mutual purpose.
Ah, I see. It directly addresses the perceived attack and clarifies what you're really trying to achieve. That seems really useful.
It's incredibly effective for quickly restoring respect. Now, sometimes the problem isn't respect, it's purpose. You realize you actually don't seem to share the same goal.
What then?
For that, they have a different tool set summarized by the acronym CRE. It stands for Commit to Seek Mutual Purpose. Recognize the purpose behind the strategy, invent a mutual purpose, and brainstorm new strategies.
So it's a process for finding or creating a shared goal when it seems like you're totally at odds.
Exactly. Finding that higher level goal that you can both agree on so you can then work out the details.
Okay, so let's assume we've made it safe or restored safety. Now we actually need to share potentially difficult information. How do we do that without triggering defensiveness all over again?
This is where the state framework comes in. It's a step-by-step method for sharing sensitive information persuasively, but also respectfully.
STATE. What does that stand for?
Share your facts.
Right.
Start with the objective. Observable data. Facts are less controversial, less judgmental.
Okay, facts first.
Then tell your story. Explain the conclusion or interpretation you've drawn based on those facts. but presented as your story, not as absolute truth.
So not you're undermining the team, but based on facts X and Y, I'm starting to wonder if maybe.
Exactly, which leads to the next steps. Ask for the other person's path. Invite their perspective. How do you see it? What's your view?
And talk tentatively. Use cautious language. I'm wondering if, perhaps, it seems like, avoid definitive, absolute statements.
And finally, encourage testing. Make it genuinely safe for them to disagree with your story or your facts. Do you see it differently? What am I missing?
That feels like a very structured, careful way to put something difficult on the table. Facts, your tentative story. Ask, talk tentatively, encourage, challenge. State.
It really lowers the defensiveness because you're not presenting your view as the only possible truth. You're inviting dialogue about it.
Makes sense. Now, dialogue is a two-way street. What about when the other person shuts down or explodes? How do we draw them back into the shared pool?
Good question. For that, we need listening skills. The authors use the acronym AMPP for their listening tools.
AMPP. Let's hear it.
Ask. Simply invite them to share what's going on. What's happening? Can you tell me more?
Mirror. This is interesting. It's about describing the mismatch between their words and their body language or tone.
Yeah, like you're saying you're fine, but you seem quite tense. Is everything okay? It gently points out the inconsistency.
Paraphrase. Restate what you think you heard them say in your own words to check for understanding. So it sounds like you're feeling frustrated because...
And if they're still really withdrawn, the last tool is prime. This is where you take your best guess at what they might be thinking or feeling to sort of prime the pump and make it easier for them to talk.
Like, are you maybe feeling like your contribution isn't being valued, taking a bit of a risk to get them started?
Exactly. The goal of all these AMPP tools is just to make it safe and easy for them to share their perspective and get back into dialogue.
Okay, so we've managed ourselves, made it safe, shared our path using state, listened using AMPP. We've had a good dialogue. Is that it?
Almost. A great conversation is kind of pointless if nothing changes afterwards. Mm-hmm. So the final step is move to action.
Right. Got to have results.
Two key parts here. First, decide how you're going to decide. They outline four methods. Command, someone just decide. Consult, get input, then decide. Vote or consensus, everyone agrees. Clarify which method you're using.
And the second part sounds crucial.
It is. Clear accountability. Who is going to do what? By when, and how will we follow up? Without that clarity, all the good dialogue can just dissipate.
Makes total sense. You need that concrete plan. Okay, stepping back from the specific tools, what are the big overarching messages you think listeners should take away from this whole approach?
Well, three or four things really stand out for me. First, and we've hit this hard, but it bears repeating, safety is the prerequisite. Always. If you feel stuck, look at safety first. Is there mutual purpose? Is there mutual respect? Fix that before you try to fix the problem.
Yeah, you can't logic your way through an unsafe conversation.
Nope. Second, the immense power of personal responsibility, that work on me first idea. You are responsible for your own emotions and your own contribution to the dialogue, largely through managing your stories. It shifts you out of being a victim of the conversation.
Take the blame game off the table.
It really does. And third, remember that the goal is synergy, not just compromise. You're not trying to meet in the middle where everyone gives something up. You're trying to expand that shared pool of meaning to find solutions that are better than what either of you started with.
A win-win that's actually more than the sum of its parts.
Exactly. And maybe a fourth point. This stuff is learnable. It seems like magic when you see someone do it well, but the authors break it down into concrete skills and frameworks like state and AMPP. It demystifies it.
Absolutely. The book is also full of really sticky phrases and quotes. Are there a couple that really capture the essence?
Definitely. What I always remember is people don't get defensive about what you're saying. They get defensive about why they think you're saying it.
Ooh, that gets right to the chase, doesn't it? It's all about perceived intent. Explains why mutual respect and contrasting are so critical.
Totally. And then there's the almost mantra-like statement. When it's safe, you can say anything.
That sums it all up, really. The challenge isn't what to say, it's how to create the conditions where it can be said and heard.
Precisely. Don't avoid the topic, build the safety.
And maybe that bold claim they make about the impact.
Oh, yeah. The single most important thing you can do to dramatically improve your relationships, your health, your career, and your happiness is to learn how to hold crucial conversations.
It really positions these skills as fundamental to, well, a good life.
They certainly make a strong case for it.
So let's make this really practical for a moment. How might someone use these tools, say, tomorrow? Well, take performance feedback at work. Instead of saying something vague and judgmental like, your attitude needs to improve, you could use state.
Okay, walk me through it.
Start with facts. I noticed that on the last 3 team calls, you didn't contribute any ideas. Then your tentative story. Tay, I'm starting to wonder if you're feeling disengaged with this project. Then ask, A, how are you seeing things? Talk tentatively. T, maybe there's something hindering your participation. Encourage testing. E, what's your perspective on this?
See how different that feels?
Yeah.
It's specific, non-judgmental, and invites collaboration instead of defensiveness.
Mm.
Much more likely to lead to a productive outcome.
What about outside work? Like a recurring argument with a spouse?
Master My Stories is huge there. Let's say your spouse forgot to do a chore they promised. Your instant villain story might be, they're so lazy and inconsiderate, which leads to yelling.
Right. Path to violence.
But if you pause, challenge the story. Okay, they're usually reliable. Why might a reasonable person forget? Maybe the story becomes, they've been incredibly stressed with that work deadline. The emotion shifts, and you approach it differently, maybe with concern or a simple reminder, not an attack.
It short-circuits the conflict cycle by changing your own internal reaction first.
Exactly. Or using contrasting in a community setting, like that school board example. Starting with, I don't want to imply you aren't dedicated educators. I do have a specific concern about playground safety I'd like us to discuss. It frames the issue constructively right away.
So these tools really do seem applicable across different parts of life. Yeah. For me, the big takeaway is reframing these conversations. They aren't just obstacles to grit your teeth through or, worse, avoid. They're actually chances to strengthen relationships and solve real problems if you have the right tools.
Yeah, it gives you a sense of competence and therefore courage to actually step into those moments instead of backing away.
What about you? Any surprising insight that really stuck?
For me, it really crystallizes around that pause. The power that comes from realizing you can consciously insert a gap between something happening, the trigger, and your reaction. And the key to creating that gap is challenging your story, that internal work. That's where the leverage is. Everything else flows from that ability to manage yourself first.
That makes a lot of sense, that internal locus of control.
So maybe the final thought to leave everyone with is this. Think about the shared pool of meaning. Consider those persistent disagreements or unresolved issues in your own life, at home, at work, maybe even in bigger societal debates. How much better could the outcomes be? How much more creative could the solutions be if everyone involved felt genuinely safe enough to put their honest thoughts, their best information, into that shared pool? What possibilities would that unlock?
A powerful question to ponder. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.